feel all right now.
Hey, I feel all right now.
Do you feel like I do right now?
Do you feel like I do right now?
Motivated.
Motivated.
Sky high.
Sky high.
Rock steady.
Rock steady.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can do it.
I can do it.
You can do it.
You can do it.
Hey, yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast, anytime, anywhere.
All right, folks, welcome back to another installment of the Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast. It is February the 16th. This episode, we're going to talk about force multipliers. Force multipliers are an interesting topic, especially in Airsoft. David H. on the Facebook page sent me a message asking specifically about this. And he brought up some good points, you know, about what are they, how do they work, things of that nature. So let's take a look. First off, force multipliers is basically in military usage refers to an attribute or a combination of attributes which may make a given force more effective than that same force would it be without it. The expected size increase required to have the same effectiveness without the advantage is a multiplication factor. For example, if a certain technology like GPS enables a force to accomplish the same results of a force 5 times as large, but without GPS, then the multiplier is 5. Such estimates are used to justify an investment cost for a force multiplier. Force multiplier refers to a factor that dramatically increases the effectiveness of an item or a group. So, breaking all that gooblygunk down, basically what you have, and especially in Airsoft. So let's say you have 2 teams. One team's got 10, one team's got 5. The objective of this game is to locate and secure an asset. Both sides have to do it. Now, there has been GPS coordinates put out specifically for that location. The 5-person team has a GPS that they can program that location into. The 10-person team does not have a GPS or a map or a compass. They're basically just out there as a gaggle. They have to split up and spread out to find the location. Automatically, the 5-person team with that GPS has a force multiplier capability because not only can they go directly to the objective, get it, and get out because they have that, but they're also a smaller force less likely to be identified, whereas the other force has to split up, break it out, and break into smaller forces, removing their capability some as of putting rounds on target as a whole organization. So force multipliers are actually a pretty big deal. I mean, there's some common factors for force multipliers that are out there, and a lot of people don't even realize these come into play when you're playing Airsoft, but they do on a multiple daily basis, even hourly in some cases. So common force multipliers are morale, technology, geographical features, weather, training, fearsome reputation, deception, military strategy, and military tactics. You know, there's some of these are kind of interesting if you talk about it, because like morale, I've seen a direct impact of force multipliers of morale. When we were running Genesis Outpost, the green team had been thumped on quite a bit, so the morale was pretty low until they just started getting to that aspect of it's like, you know what, no, let's do this. We're going to go out there, we're going to have fun. And the side commander beefed up the morale to the point that these guys were just literally monsters on the field, and that morale was a huge force multiplier because they were essentially taking on forces that were a little better organized, not so much better trained, but they were standardly around here, tan side's always the more organized groups. So that morale was a huge force multiplier. It basically beefed up their capabilities to where they won the game. And it was a lot due to the morale and just the tenacity of those players. So, that, you know, technology is a common force multiplier. Everybody knows that if you're playing a night game and you're going up against a side that has night vision, that's a huge force multiplier. You got to start thinking outside of the box how to defeat that force multiplier. It can be done. I'm actually thinking about doing a podcast later on the line, if you guys would like to, on how to defeat night vision and thermal optics. Because thermal optics are common. They're not as common as night vision, but they are out there. I've fought against one, and it's fun, but it's also not. There's mixed feelings on it. So night vision thermal optics are huge force multipliers, especially in night games, but they can be defeated. And there's other aspects to be used against those. You know, geographical features, using the terrain is always a common tactic that you should use, and you can use that as a force multiplier. Drawing somebody into a box canyon where they can't get out and can't get out the sides, and you sitting up on top shooting at them, that's a huge force multiplier. Weather's always a force multiplier, because if it's the suck outside and you're out there, but the other side doesn't want to be out there, you want to be out there, you're going to win. You're using that weather as a force multiplier. It's not only affecting your capability to maneuver, but it's also affecting your capability in your morale. Training, it's a given. Everybody understands, that with training you get better force multipliers. You know, the better you're trained at working together as a team, the better off you are on the field. Fearsome reputation is something that makes me personally, I love hearing about this, because a lot of times you'll have like a local events and stuff, you have these guys that get, or these gals that get to this point where they're really good and people are like, oh man, I want to be on their side. I don't want to face them. That's a fearsome reputation. So if you can beat the opponents off the field before you step onto it, you're applying a force multiplier to your aspects of you playing. If your reputation as an airsofter is, you're fearsome on the field and off the field, there's that it throws that aspect, the force multiplier, in there. People are less likely to go head-to-head with you. And then you throw that aspect of a team in there that they're, these guys are gung-ho, they're locked and cocked, they're squared away, they're trained heavily, they look fearsome, they act fearsome, and then on the field, their appearance is backed up by their capabilities. That's a fearsome reputation. That's a force multiplier. It's a huge aspect to it. So then you have the deception. Deception is always a force multiplier. Because, and a prime example of this is during the Civil War, there was many occasions when the Southern forces were ultimately outnumbered by Union forces. And one of the key deceptions that comes to mind right off the top of my head was Vicksburg. Vicksburg was under siege. Yet the Union forces would not directly attack certain areas of Vicksburg because it looked like they had siege guns all around the outside of Vicksburg. Well, after Vicksburg was attacked and sieged, they come to find out that there were locks in the parapets. All it was a log that would have been painted black to look like a cannon. They didn't actually have any weapons in there, so it was a huge deception. Another common tactic that was used was used on both the Union and the Southern sides to throw off intelligence gathering. They would light multiple fires in areas where maybe you only had 1,000 men, so 1,000 men would have so many fires. Well, they would light multiple fires on top of that. And this is actually a tactic that was picked up and learned from the Mongolian hordes, Kublai Khan and his type. They would light multiple fires out in there to make their force look larger than what it was. So it's a deception. That deception is a force multiplier. It makes the other side overthink the aspects of that. So there's always those good aspects on the deception pact. Military strategy. That's a common sense aspect. Anytime you apply a strategy, you're going to be clicking in a force multiplier. Military tactics, same thing. Concentrating your forces, using your capabilities, all of those are force multipliers. So going through all those, we kind of understand a little bit better. But what's the point in force multipliers? I mean, why do we even care about a force multiplier? Well, naturally, most airsofters are applying force multipliers without even knowing it, by just what we talked about. The deception, the weather, the geographical terrain, technology. Technology is a huge one for airsoft. It seems to be the trend nowadays is he with the coolest toys wins. Drones is the key, is one of the biggest ones that I've seen. And personal opinion on drone usage, it's kind of a two-way street here. I understand guys wanting to use these things, take them out in the field, and I understand people don't want them to get shot down. But, and this is me going off into the weeds real quick here on these drones. I'm just going to get this thrown out here. My personal opinion is if you bring some capability out into the field, then I, as a individual responding to it, should be able to come up with a capability to remove that capability on your side. So, i.e. drones. You have a drone in the field, I should be able to go and get a Stinger missile and knock it out of the air. Now, do we have Stinger missiles in airsoft? No, we don't. but there should be some capability for us to do some air-to-air or air-to-ground capabilities to knock that out of the air for a certain period of time. Not saying to shoot it out of the sky with an airsoft rifle, because these drones are expensive as all get out. I just recently bought a miniature one, miniature backpack one, just to play around with. They're expensive. I get that. I don't want to see people going out and breaking stuff away, but force multipliers need to, and this goes right back into the force multiplier aspect. So if one side has a force multiplier aspect, then the other side should be smart enough to figure out a way to apply a force multiplier to their own capabilities to counteract that force multiplier. Not saying that it needs to be balanced, not saying that the game admins need to go, okay, well, if you've got this, they need this. No, who cares on that aspect? If they bring out a drone and they're flying that drone, good on them. Then that should be give me the capabilities to go over and figure out some way to do an air-to-ground. If the game hosts put that into play, that you have air-to-ground, you know, surface-to-air missiles, awesome on that game host, you know, supporting out-of-the-box thinking. One of the coolest ways I've seen taking drones out is you go get those instant Polaroid cameras, you affix it to a PVC pipe tube, paint it green, put a handle on it, you aim through the reticule, aim through the eyesight of the Polaroid camera, you see the drone in the sky, you take a picture, you develop the picture right there on the spot. If the picture develops and it shows the drone, guess what? You just shot the drone down. The drone's down for 10 minutes. Give somebody a quick capability, and that's a force multiplier. It adds a lot to the gameplay. Technology is always something that adds to it. So now, let's look at... So we kind of figured out the what if and how is, and you're starting to realize, I hope, that you actually apply force multipliers all the time. Airsoft really uses a whole lot of force multipliers, because in most cases, we're talking squad-on-squad level engagements. Very rarely do you see anything more than a squad versus a squad. Yes, of course, we'll have those larger games where you have company versus company, but it breaks it down to literally it's squad versus squad. The company moves in, and then it goes into the squad level maneuvering. There's very rarely a large level of organization where you actually have a company versus a company operating at the company level. It just doesn't happen. I'm not sure why. That's something we can get into the weeds on a later time of day. So one of the biggest aspects in airsoft, outside of technology, one of the biggest things that I've seen that's been a force multiplier is grenades. Especially when it comes to the close quarters combat play, or even just in when you get into some buildings. Grenades have become a huge force multiplier, especially the pea grenades. If you have a pea grenade, typically you can get into a building a lot easier than a force that's trying to get into a building without it, and you take less casualties. Now see, that's where force multipliers balance itself out. You got to look at whatever you're using, and you go, okay, does this piece of equipment give me a benefit? Yes. Does this piece of equipment give me a benefit in the aspects of reducing my casualty-taking capabilities on the field? Yes. Does this capability give me a benefit against producing casualties on the other side? Yes. Then it's a beneficial force multiplier. If you can answer those three things right there, then it's a beneficial force multiplier. So grenades, I have a pea grenade. Does this give me a benefit? Yes. Does this reduce casualty producing capabilities on me by the enemy? Yes, it does, because if I throw that pea grenade into a room, I don't have to send bodies in to clear it out. Let the pea grenade do its job, then I can go in afterwards. Does this pea grenade produce casualties on the other side? Yes, it does, just as we've already said. So those three yeses are good to go. Now let's look at Thunderbee grenades. Thunderbee grenades are hit or miss, because Is it a benefit? Yes, it can be. Does it reduce casualties on your side? Yes, it can, but no, it can't, depending on how the rule sets are set up, or if you put BBs in it. There's a bunch of different factors. So when you're looking at those things, that's what you have to decide and figure out for each little force multiplier that you're applying. Now, grenades are a huge force multiplier aspect. Another one that I haven't seen so much is claymores, landmines, things of those natures, and a lot of it's just due to the technology behind those pieces of equipment. One, they're just now starting to get developed to where they actually function properly, and they're worth it. Two is a price cost, and that's all force multipliers become a price cost, just like I said at the beginning. Me, personally, if I'm going, the advantage I get from getting a, if I go out and I pay $8,000 for a thermal sight, I have this thermal imager. Does it give me an advantage? Oh yeah, it gives me a huge advantage. Is it going to reduce casualties? Potentially it's going to reduce casualties. Is it going to increase casualties? Yes, it's going to increase casualties. But does the cost balance out the benefit? In my mind, no, not at all. $8,000 just to utilize it for a 4 hour, you know, maybe 4 hours in the middle of the night, as cool as it is, it doesn't balance out my benefits when I could do the same with some Gen 4s, Gen 3 night vision, and still be just as capable and not pay as much. And that's something, as on a personal level, you have to look at your force multipliers. Does it give you a benefit? Does the cost outweigh the benefit? And in my mind, and in most force multipliers, when you're applying these aspects, the cost should never outweigh the benefit. It should be the benefit should always outweigh the cost. So a prime example are claymores. There's new claymores out now that they're getting real efficient, real effective. The only aspect about them is you have to go back and police them up afterwards. And that's one of the difficult parts with airsoft, just because it's such a fast-paced movement type deal. Now, if you're doing milsim and you're setting up patrol bases, you would use claymores. And then you'd go and police those claymores up before you moved on. So yeah, they would be a benefit in that aspect. Now, claymores are typically running anywhere from $150 to, I've seen a couple of $200, sometimes $100. Does the cost outweigh the benefits? It depends. That's the key thing with force multipliers. Are you going to use these? Are you going to use them effectively? Do you know how to use them? To me, a claymore, the cost doesn't outweigh the benefits, because the benefits are way more efficient than the cost. I can pay, you know, I get $100, and if I set up a, I pay $100 for a claymore, and I set up a very effective ambush, and it works, that claymore goes off and takes out four guys in that ambush. I just paid for it in itself in enjoyment and in a force multiplier aspect, because that one claymore applied to four guys, plus my four guys on an ambush, ambushing a full squad. So I'm attacking 12 guys. I have one claymore and four guys. That's my force multiplier. I just bumped my squad up to at least four because I took out four with that claymore. Could be more, could be less. But either way, that force multiplier has just made my capabilities that much higher. It's outweighed the cost with the benefits. So I can see that being effective. Claymores are that way. One of the hugest force multipliers you see applied almost everywhere are rocket launchers, whether they're the purchased or the homemade. Those are huge, and they automatically, the cost doesn't outweigh the benefits of the having one of these, especially if you're in an AO that's utilizing vehicles. As soon as that rocket hits a vehicle, you've just reduced their force multiplier capabilities through the roof, increased yours, and you're good to go. You've got a lot going on for you there. Rockets are also capable of doing anti-vehicle and anti-infantry, because most game rule sets have a, if it hits within 15, you know, hits within 15 feet, everybody's dead within 15 feet rule radius, or something along those lines. So the benefits of a rocket launcher outweighs the cost. And typically most rocket launchers, I know when I made mine, it cost me maybe $10 to make it. I mean, I spent more time cussing at myself because I glued my fingers together with pipe glue than I did anything else. So the benefit of that always outweighs the cost and that estimate. And that's one of the things you want to look at the force multiplier. And having one, even if you don't use it, you have it, it's a force multiplier. Because even if they see you carrying it on the field, vehicles are less likely to attack a squad that has three rocket launchers than they are to a vehicle attack a squad that only has one or none. So in that itself, it's a force multiplier. So then we go into the next aspect is vehicles. Vehicles are a huge force multiplier. Because of the aspect, if you can take one vehicle out on the field and you can run that vehicle straight up to an objective, dump out a squad, go back, pick up another squad, go back, dump that squad up there before the other side even has the capability of moving in on foot, you've just increased your force multiplication by two full squads on an objective with one vehicle. and less time than it would take for the whole other side to move up on foot. Huge force multiplier right there in and of itself. Now, does the cost outweigh the benefits? That one is on a personal level. Having gone and taken a vehicle and utilized one as an attack vehicle, I'm going to say personal enjoyment-wise, oh yeah, the benefits of having that thing outweighed the cost every time. But you got to look at the realistic aspect of life and jobs and families and fun and hobbies and having that money to do that stuff. It sometimes is not going to, they're not going to balance out, and that's what you have to look at. But that's where you have other aspects you can throw into that force multiplier. So vehicles are always going to be a huge force multiplier, but the cost to the benefit ratio is what's really going to affect the utilization of that. So there's where you look at that in the force multiplier aspect. So I mean, overall, force multipliers are out there and we use them on a daily basis. I mean, every time you go out and play, you're using some sort of force multiplier. Some of the smaller ones I've seen, like I picked up one of the muzzle flash generators from Incentive Designs, and I had it out at Black Sheep in Guernsey this last year, and when we were doing the night ops, and it was a huge force multiplier up until they figured out what was going on. Because I was the only one with one, so I'd pop up and start shooting, and I mean, it's flashing, and it's blinding, and it's burning out guys'. It was zeroing out guys' night vision, and some of them were like, "Holy crap, what is that thing?" It was freaking them out because there was a big mental aspect of this image. It looks like somebody is shooting at you, which they are, but it just looks like an actual muzzle flash going off, shooting at you in the middle of the night. So it was a huge force multiplier. By itself. Now, apply that to a whole squad and have that whole squad open up like that would have been awesome. But the benefits are to the cost ratio are just about right. The thing you have to look at, though, is if you're the only one running that thing, you become a huge target. So you have to use it effectively. And that's the key factor about force multipliers. You have to use them effectively. Just because you have night vision doesn't make you capable of operating in night vision. A lot of times guys go out with night vision and they forget that night vision does not have any depth perception. And for anybody that's ever tried to utilize night vision over rough terrain and they've never done it before, you're going to get a lot of bruises, bumps, you might break stuff. So there's always that aspect of utilizing the force multipliers correctly. Force multipliers with booby traps, that's another key one. Is one thing that always kills me is we'll be playing against a group and they'll use a booby trap. Well, they set the booby traps in such a fashion that it's right there in the open. You can see it. That's a wasted booby trap. And on a couple of occasions, I've actually taken the other side's booby traps, pulled them off, gone up, set them up somewhere else, their own booby trap, taken their own booby trap, disarmed it, picked it up, set it up somewhere else, and they've walked into their own booby trap and it's gone off. And then they get upset and it's like, well, look, you didn't utilize it correctly. I did. It's not my fault that I used your own equipment. That's a force multiplier that's thinking outside of the box. And that's what you need to do with these force multipliers, is think outside of the box, use them correctly, and then go beyond using them correctly to utilize them in a manner that's going to be most beneficial to you. Thunderbee grenades. Those things can be utilized for all kinds of stuff. You just have to look at it. That's the aspect of the force multipliers. Force multipliers are literally the whole purpose and concept behind it is like I said at the beginning. You've got four guys. Four guys are going up against 80 guys. Well, here, no. Well, let's back this up. Prime example. Seven guys. I have seven guys down in a valley. We are facing up to 60 individuals. We could have tried to duke it out, but we had a force multiplier on our side. We had a building that literally channelized everybody into a kill zone. So we utilized that terrain feature as a force multiplier. Those seven guys were able to hold out close to 2 hours until we started running out of ammo, and then they finally figured out how to get in behind us, utilizing channelizing fields of fire with a building. And it worked effectively. I mean, we knew we weren't going to hold out for long, but we wanted to try to hold out to the longest as possible. We got close to 2.5 hours out of that fight. because we pulled back, used a centralized building, channelized them in there, applied a force multiplier. Now, that's a huge force multiplier if you think about it, because 60 against 7, and we were able to hold out for 2.5 hours, that's a pretty big force multiplier right there. That's something to really consider when you're looking at these things. So the benefits definitely outweighed the cost, because, yeah, eventually all 7 of us died. We all got eliminated. But the benefits, we took out I don't know how many before they finally got in and got us. So you have those aspects. Now, one of the negative aspects of force multipliers is the whole cool guy look. Looking at, you know, not just cool guy, but the gear do and all this other stuff. You know, lasers kill me. Because they make me laugh in many ways. Because lasers on a weapon system, when you're firing a real steel weapon system, lasers are great. Because especially if they're dialed in properly. For close-range engagement, those things do what they're supposed to do. You point the laser right on the target, pull the trigger, usually the round goes right where it needs to go. In airsoft, you're running around giving everybody a laser show. Because the ballistic capabilities on an airsoft rifle is not as exact as a real firearm. Now, granted, if you zero that laser generalized to the airsoft gun, typically you put the laser on where you want to go, it's going to go there. Typically, but you've got wind factors, you've got everything else that's going to come into play. But to me, lasers as a force multiplier don't multiply your force capabilities. Because of the simple aspect is if all of a sudden I'm seeing all these little green and red dots and then dust kicks up and I'm seeing lines, lasers are worse than tracers. Because I can see every movement that you're doing. If my night vision has IR capabilities, which most do, you pick up lasers way faster than you pick up anything else. People forget to turn them on. I mean, they don't. Lasers have no real effect on your force multiplication capabilities. They really don't. They do negative damage to your force multiplication capabilities more than positive. So there's a negative aspect to force multipliers as well. You know, there's the other one is your weight ratios. Okay, so you force multiplier for your squad is a squad automatic weapon. You've got a saw. You're playing at an event where semi-auto only unless you have squad automatic weapons. Well, the event rule host says, okay, well, there's no limit to how many squad automatic weapons you can have. Well, you're like, oh, well, we got 5. There's 10 of us, so let's go 5 heavy weapons and or 5 squad automatic weapons and 5 rifles. Well, you get out there, and your first mission is a click and a half away. That's 1.5 kilometers. That's almost a mile and some odd distance. Yeah, math is not my hard suit. I know kilometers, miles, yeah, well, whatever. So anyways, that's a long distance. And you're doing it on foot through heavy terrain. So all of a sudden, as the team leader, you start noticing your riflemen are outpacing your squad automatic weapons. So you put your front squad automatic weapons up in front. So now your time on target has increased and you're slowing down. And you keep slowing down. You have to start taking more breaks. You have to know, you notice that guys are starting to drop out. You have to stop to pick them up. You have to switch out the weapons. So when you finally do get to your target, everybody's dead tired because of that distance you humped with those the medium weapons. So everybody flops down and starts laying suppressive fire, and it just turns into one of these where we're just going to sit here and shoot till we can't shoot no more. Nobody's ready to move or flank or do anything else. So any training that you've done just thrown out the window because you decided to take more firepower over capability of maneuver. Force multiplication adds into that aspect. Force multipliers is that's what helps you develop that key concept there. So in this case here, rather than taking 5, take 2. You're still going to have the same capabilities of having all that extra firepower because you have 2 squad automatic weapons, but you're still going to have the maneuverability. You shouldn't burn yourselves, your guys out, you shouldn't burn yourselves out as much trying to hump 5 weapons in when you're only humping the 2 plus the rifles. So that's what you need to look at when you're developing your squad and looking at your force multipliers and stuff. Do I go heavy with grenades, yet I'm in an open terrain, field terrain that doesn't really utilize grenades, so I'm taking all these extra grenades and I'm not taking extra magazines? And this is an in-depth thought process. This is one that rarely does your typical weekend airsofters think about, because they just go for the look or they go for what functions for them. Milsimmers, on the other hand, need to start developing and thinking about this aspect of the force multiplication on the individual level and on the squad level and then on the team level. You need to start tailoring your gear to sustain and support that aspect. I mean, the guys I work with, we all carry at least 6 magazines. We don't worry about grenades because most of the time we're not dealing with close quarters combat. When we do deal with close quarters combat, we have shotguns or we utilize others with grenades. So that ties into the force multiplier of the team aspect. They bring grenades, we support them with bodies. It works out, win-win. So overall, force multipliers are a variety of things that can adapt and develop your capabilities on the field, and it takes 4 guys and multiplies them to additional 4 guys. So you could have 8 guys just by one piece of equipment, i.e. a claymore. Or in the case of a vehicle, you take a vehicle, say like our Buffalo. Our Buffalo takes 4 guys and multiplies it to at least 10 because of the weapons capabilities, because of the maneuverability, because of the armor capabilities, because of teamwork inside that crew compartment. And that's a key factor there. That's a force multiplier in and of itself. Training. And I really didn't touch on it much, but training is a huge force multiplier, because the more capable you are of training together and working together as a team, and just getting along together as a team, will throw huge factors into your force multiplication, because a group that can go out and play and have fun and doesn't second guess themselves will be more capable than a group that goes out there and goes, well, I should be the leader. No, I should be the leader. Well, no, I should be the leader. Well, I was Navy SEAL Delta Squirrel for 12 years. I should be the leader. Those aspects, you're going to just sit there and then you're just going to see everybody's going to go woof every direction they want to, rather than stay together and work as a cohesive unit. So with that, I think we're about done on the force multipliers. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, subscribe, likes, recommend, send me questions. If you have a topic you'd like to get discussed, by all means, let me know. I will look into discussing those topics. Still have the BBs Not Bullies patches available. If you want one of those, you can pick them up directly from the Facebook page. Just click the shop over on the left-hand corner. Click the button. It's $10, $1 flat shipping. That's just to cover the shipping. Grab it. Wear it. Show it with pride. Remember, that's the key aspect about being in Airsoft. It's about honor, integrity, true sportsmanship, and fun. If you're not getting into those aspects, then we need to have a heart-to-heart discussion and maybe a tree line with an e-tool. Good times. Dig some fight holes. The school is progressing fantastically. It is in the final stages of development. It is in the final stages of planning. The manual is going to be released. I'm going to put the manual up for sale March 1st. I just finished up the last 2 chapters that I wanted to put into it. It essentially went from 75 pages to 95 pages. This is not your everyday reading manual. This is actually down and dirty, got a lot of good stuff in there. So it will be available for sale March 1st. I haven't decided on the cost yet. It's not going to be anything crazy. All the proceeds from the manuals go towards supporting development of more and more manuals, development of the class, and helping with this podcast. Just be aware that if you decide to go to one of the classes, you will get a manual at the class. It's part of what you get when you come to the class. It's part of the package. So if you intend on going to one of the classes, hold off on buying the manual. It's just giving you a little, I don't want to see guys go and buy the manual and then show up to the class. Unless you really intend, really, really want to, and I really would appreciate it, but you don't have to. I'm just giving you a heads up. So with that, I'm going to stop yammering, get this all sent up to you guys. I hope you enjoy. get out there, sling some BBs, be safe, be honorable, and I will catch you on the field.
Remember the four rules of gun safety. Always treat your gun as if it were loaded. Keep your fingers straight and off the trigger until you intend to fire. Do not point your airsoft gun at anything you do not intend to shoot. Know your target and what's behind it. Always wear full CLAP protection, rated to ANSI Z81.7 standards. Keep your airsoft guns in a case or bag until you are on the field. Only conduct your airsoft activities on approved fields, or on private land with owner's written consent, or public lands with consent of local law enforcement. The Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast is not liable for any criminal action, injury, harm or damage caused by any person or persons utilizing the information presented. Be safe, be honorable and have fun. Questions or comments, find us on Facebook under Airsoft Milsim Tactical Training Podcast.